Today is Thursday, April 25th, 2024. Could this be us entering the final weeks of Hamza Yusuf's leadership, or is the end of the Butte House Agreement just a bump in the road to independence? Hear the full discussion on today's episode of Untribal Podcast. Welcome to the Untribal Podcast, the show that gives you news content by regular people for regular people. Keen listeners of the show will know that I am not in it, so I have much less of an Edinburgh accent. But today's show was such an emergency that we had to pull out all the stops. Today we're going to be discussing the, some would say inevitable, some would say shock, ending to the Butte House Agreement this morning. And with me, I have two of the Scottish Green members. I've got Guy Ingerson, who is the candidate for Aberdeen South, and Ted Booth, the communications officer for Dundee and Angus Greens. How are we both?
Good, thanks.
Yeah, I'm good. Excited to be here.
Good, good. Well, first, we'll come to you first, Guy. What was your reaction to the news this morning?
I wasn't entirely surprised. I think a lot of members would have been surprised. It's not a huge surprise to see that the larger party in the cooperation agreement has decided to jump first in this case, to preempt the possibility that Scottish Green members would have voted to end the Butte House Agreement at the end of this month. From a strategic point of view, I can see the short-term thinking that this would be beneficial, to see that you're taking the initiative, for example. But in the long term, well, not even that long term, we've already seen that there's a vote of no confidence coming through. Whether he's if he survives that more longer term, I would be shocked to see if he would be First Minister by 2026. We've got the UK general election coming up. The SNP are projected to lose anywhere up to 20 seats. I think there will be some people right now who are rubbing their hands with glee that he has done exactly what they wanted him to do. And when I say those people, I'm talking about people like your Kate Forbes, for example. So I'm not shocked from a Green perspective. But I can imagine a lot of SNP people will be quite shocked today.
Definitely, that's definitely the feeling that I've picked up from people I've spoke to so far. I think it came rather out of the blue from us. I think obviously there was a bit of a question about the next steps. There was the EGM that was called by the Scottish Greens, but to be honest, it's definitely surprised me. Ted, what was the feeling in the, with the Green members you spoke to? Was it a feeling that it was inevitable that you would have voted against it next month, or?
I don't think it was inevitable. I was a bit surprised that this has happened. But there was always the chance that Hamza would, or the SNP would, choose to jump before they were pushed. But I don't think it was inevitable. The general feeling I was getting was that members were really torn. I knew I was speaking to a lot that were genuinely undecided. They could see the positives of having a seat at the table, but they also felt really let down by the Butte House Agreement. They saw a lot of backtracking or unnecessary compromises or compromises that were maybe a bit too much. So I honestly don't know how it would have gone if it went. I would have liked to have had the chance to actually vote on it, but that's been taken out of our hands. In something that I think was extremely short-sighted. I mean, I thought it was short-sighted, but actually a week, that there's a vote of no confidence, so it's even more short-sighted than some of us probably would have thought.
Yeah, definitely. I think none of us really waking up this morning could have seen the way that today unplayed. And to hold a press conference like that in Butte House and then show up for First Minister's questions, definitely a decision not to be taken lightly. We've seen at the press conference a lot of the press from Scotland saying essentially that it was the nail in Hamza Yusuf's coffin. Do you think there was really any other way this could have played out after this morning's press conference, or was the vote of no confidence and the Greens supporting that vote of no confidence inevitable?
I'll take that one. I don't think it was inevitable. I think there's understandable anger amongst our MSP team. about the way that they've been treated. You know, there's been a complete breakdown in trust between them and the First Minister. So I'm not surprised that a motion of no confidence is being supported by our MSP team. I do think, personally, for me, I think some of the language that was used as this agreement ended was probably a bit intemperate, because at the end of the day, people expect us, not us per se, but our MSPs, to act in the national interest. And we have a hung parliament situation in Scotland, and we almost always have a hung parliament situation in Scotland. So it's incumbent on all party leaders, not just our own, but to be working together with other parties to get things done. And I think right now, you know, we're bisected by different crises, whether it's in the economy, the NHS, or the one that broke this particular camel's back, the climate crisis. I think people expect us to be working together. And I do think some of the language has probably painted us into a bit of a corner here. I think, well, it could have been handled differently. Personally, you know, we could have abstained, for example, but that's not a decision for me or Ted or any of the other members to make. That's a decision for our MSPs. And I'm sure that it weighed heavily on their mind that there might be some instability caused by this. It's very odd to see, you know, a bizarre figure like Ash Reagan now holding the strings to Hamza Yousaf's future. I do not know what she will demand, whether it's another thermometer or some other bizarre idea that she has in her head, or more sinister stuff like the rampant transphobia that she often promotes. So I think Hamza is going to massively regret what he has done today. At least if he had waited until the end of the month, we could have voted to leave the Bute House agreement, maybe had a situation like that, but he wouldn't have been facing a vote of no confidence in Parliament. Because of his actions today, he now is.
Going back to the last couple of days, once it became clear that the Scottish Greens were going to have this vote on the continuation of the Bute House agreement, Patrick Harvey very publicly stated that he would resign as leader if the Bute House agreement was ended. Do we think that that was a genuine reaction, or do we think it was more of trying to sway the voters one way or the other? Because it's clear that, especially from the press conferences of the Greens today, neither Lorna Slater or Patrick Harvey wanted the Bute House agreement to end. Was this a case of the Scottish Greens almost turning their back on the views of the leadership, or has there been something misconstrued?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I think the co-leaders have put a lot into the Bute House agreement. They were very vocally in favour of it in the run-up to the members' vote, the initial vote. And they were very much for keeping it. I think that Patrick, I don't want to speak for him, but I think that it was a genuine statement that he believes so strongly in the Bute House agreement that he sort of bets his leadership on it. Although I do think that this situation's actually probably helped him a little bit, because it kind of removes the any need for something like that, or a little bit. But yeah, I think if it had gone to a vote and the members had voted to end the Bute House agreement, I do think that we'd be in a position where the two leaders would have to seriously consider their positions, but we don't have that, so...
Sorry, Guy, on you go.
Yeah, just on that, I do think there needs to be some reflection, though. You know, this is our first time ever that Greens have been in government, and we didn't get everything right. And I think that's something we need to take on board, because this won't, in my view, the last time that we're in government, but it's almost bound to happen just because of the way, the nature of our parliament, the proportional nature of our parliament. So I think we do need to take lessons from what's happened, and that could be around particular bills or government actions. You know, there was a lot of criticism around, for example, the deposit return scheme. I think people forget that scheme was actually set up, I think it was in 2019, by the SNP. We essentially were implementing an SNP policy there. I would suggest we should have scrapped the SNP policy and came up with a new green one, does redesigned the entire policy completely in the way that Greens would have wanted. Instead of looking at industry, we could maybe deliver some of it through local authorities, for example. So I think there's lessons that we need to take on board. And I wouldn't just say our leaders need to do that. I think our MSPs, our councillors, and all of our members need to take those lessons on board. Because obviously, we've always painted ourselves as the grown-ups in the room. And I would suggest that we want to continue to do that. We want to continue to be the grown-ups in the room. So we need to actually take a moment, take a step back. There's a lot of emotion right now. There's obviously going to be that. It just happened today. But in a week's time, a month's time, we need to take that time to actually reflect. And hopefully the next time we're in government, things will go even more smoothly and even better. And we'll be able to get more concessions for the people of Scotland.
I mean, I've got to absolutely agree with that. I think we really should be reflecting on what went well and what didn't go so well. Not just because we could be cooperating with other parties or the SNP again in the future, but across council chambers, if the Greens continue to grow, we're going to be cooperating with all parties in local authorities. So I do think that we really need time to reflect on that, take time to reflect on that, so we're stronger going forward, and maybe not so naive. I think first time in government, I do think we maybe were a bit too trusting. I don't know if the SNP were acting entirely in good faith when they invited us in. This decision today suggests maybe they weren't. But yeah, I do think we need to take time to think about that going forward.
I think a lot of the criticism that came out around about the time of the Beauty House Agreement was that the SNP maybe weren't acting in good faith, and actually it was just a case to get independence over the line, as opposed to actually having a care for the specific policies that the Green Party had proposed in the 2021 election. Sticking on independence just for a little while, obviously that is probably what unites the SNP and the Greens more than anything, and probably the deciding factor to bring them into the Beauty House Agreement in the first place. The SNP obviously had their conference in October and voted through a rather controversial independence strategy. As Green members, what was the thought when that strategy was voted through? Is it one that we're supportive of? Is it one we're against? It almost seems to go against the Beauty House Agreement, in that the Beauty House Agreement brings these two independence parties together for a pro-independence majority in the Scottish Parliament, but at the same time, the larger of those two parties is saying to completely disregard the Green Party and any other independence parties at the Westminster election. How did that maybe change a few opinions on the Beauty House Agreement? Anything like that?
I think I'll go first on this one. I don't think the SNP know how to get independence at all. I think if we're being realistic with ourselves, and I remember saying this probably back as early as 2017, and people at the time in the independence movement just weren't ready to hear it. I had said, I personally think independence is on the back burner until the 2030s. And at the time, you'll remember Nicola Sturgeon had said, oh, we're going to call an independence referendum. I think she said at every conference that she hosted in her time in office, independence is going to be next October, for example. I just thought people were being deluded there. And it seemed to me to be a clear strategy to keep people either within the SNP or voting SNP. I think we need to be honest and realistic, and we need to be honest with independence voters. The way things are right now, whether it's with the Tories or Labour at the next Westminster election, we're not going to get independence. We're not going to get the go-ahead to do that unless it's an incredibly hung parliament and it needs the SNP. But even then, the Labour and Tories will have a supermajority in any Westminster parliament. So they would have to be really ideologically opposed before they would be turned into the SNP. So I think there needs to be a wider conversation within Scotland and within the independence movement. We need to be getting that support. It's held steady now for 10 years at 45%. Why are we not making progress on that? That's something that we need to ask ourselves as a movement. Is the parliamentary system the way to go, or is, does it need more of that public backing? Do we need Civic Scotland on our side as well? And I think a classic example of where we went wrong is the Scottish Independence Convention has been supposed to be bringing everyone together, but it's become a hollowed out talking shop of an institution. I'm not even entirely sure if it's still functional or if it's been mothballed, to be honest. But that could have been a vehicle to bring people together. And I think tying independence to the fortunes of one party was always a big mistake. If you look at the situation in Catalonia, for example, they're going through some problems, similar problems to ourselves. Although obviously the context and situation is much different. But I think we need to be a bit more honest with ourselves. And a classic example on the policy front, the currency plan that has been proposed is, to be perfectly frank, shite. It is. The idea that you're going to use another country's currency unilaterally in a country of 5 million people like Scotland and think that people are going to buy that is a nonsense. So 10 years on from the independence vote, I actually think we've probably moved backwards. I think it's probably going to take a good wee while before we get to where we need to be. And I think if we're being realistic ourselves, we should be looking and preparing the independence movement for a referendum in the 2030s. Not today, not tomorrow.
How, as Green members, how important to the Green Party is independence? I think probably the counter argument to a lot of what you said there, Guy, would be that for all the flaws that the currency plan that the SNP have proposed has, it seems to only be, at least the only ones that get the vast media coverage, are the only proposals seem to be coming from the SNP. Is independence high enough up on the Greens' priorities to rival the SNP and separate the independents from a specific party? Or is it the case that actually independence to the Greens is less important than obviously the Green policies, but kind of everything else, and that actually independence is a good thing, but just now unachievable?
I think for us, independence is a means to an end. And it always has been. And I actually think in discussions I've had with voters, most of them seem to believe that independence is a means to an end. There is a hardcore group who just want independence for the sake of independence because they believe Scotland should be sovereign. But most people aren't voting for independence just for the sake of it. They are voting for independence because they want a better future for themselves, for their children and for their grandchildren. And I think Scottish Greens provide that. You know, Scottish Greens have always been a party that looks far into the future because that's the nature of climate change and that's the nature of the environment. You know, you have to look decades into the future. I think there's a real space actually for the Greens to take a much more leading role in the cause of independence and frankly, in developing the ideas. I mean, we have a party full of people with PhDs, masters, we have scientists, we have all these wonderful brains. You know, we can be essentially the think tank of the independence movement. But the big problem there is, I do think there are some in the SNP who, for whatever reason, just don't see us as that vehicle. And that's fine. You know, if they think the SNP is taking them where they need to go, power to them. But I think there is an opportunity here for Greens, not because of this Bute House agreement ending, but more widely, that we can seize. And I would urge people, obviously, because I'm a Green, to join the Greens and help us do that and complete that work.
Yeah, and I think actually the public are starting to see that too. I don't really like using personal examples as evidence that, you know, the whole of Scotland is about to go vote Green at potentially a snap Scottish Parliament election or in 2026. But I've got two family members who have always voted SNP. Independence, really high priority for them. But they've said that they're going to vote Green next time because they're tired of the SNP, but the Greens still support independence. So I do think the public are beginning to see us as a credible party of independence. And I do think speaking to Green members, everyone's different, but there is a significant group that independence is their priority. There's a significant group that, you know, the climate crisis is their significant priority. And of course, it's a priority for every member. But Yeah, I do think we needed to be taking more of a leading role, but we're still up against the Scottish government. The SNP are the Scottish government. They're the one that get the publicity. They're the ones that are seen to be in charge of the transition. If we were to, hold a referendum and vote in favour for independence, they're the ones seen to be in charge of that transition from being in the union to being independent.
I think tensions are high just now. Very, very clear throughout the whole day that emotions are high in Holyrood. Very clear online that emotions are high with members of both parties. Trying to look past the immediate reaction is what are the long-term benefits to the Greens to be out of the Butte House agreement? There was obviously a lot of talk, especially online, especially with the announcement of this EGM, that actually there was a proportion of the Green membership that wanted out the Butte House agreement. What are the tangible benefits for that?
I mean, one of them we've already seen today, whether or not we agree with the exact tone of it, but the freedom that the co-leaders now have to criticise the government and criticise decisions that the government have made, are going to make. So I do think that's a massive benefit. I think the political makeup of the parliament is also a benefit, to us in any budget negotiations, unless the SNP are. Like we expect them to going to move to the right, and maybe they'll work with the Conservatives again. But I can't see Douglas Ross doing that. But maybe the Lib Dems will be their ticket to safety. But I really don't see a way forward for the SNP without trying to win some favour back from the Greens, because there's very little room for manoeuvring with these budgets. So yeah, I do think we can have a lot of influence over that.
Yeah, I think also there's bills that have maybe been published as part of the Butte House Agreement that we can now influence in a different way. So take the housing bill, which was the big one for I think most Green members. And if I'm being honest with myself, I think the housing bill was the bill that was making me hesitant to leave the Butte House Agreement because I want rent controls, and I think the vast majority of our membership want rent controls, and we want to see the housing crisis tackled. But then we also had a situation where we were voting for cuts to the housing budget when it came to actually building housing. So we had this juxtaposition here where we're the party of tenants, we'll cap your rents, but we won't build you any new homes. And that was a contradiction. Now we don't, now we are free to avoid that contradiction entirely. Some people obviously might punish us for voting through the cuts in the budget. But now we're free to reverse that mistake. And we've got 2 years to correct any mistakes that we've made. I think Hamza Yousaf and I think the SNP have a much narrower time frame to sort themselves out. I mean, one of the things that a lot of Greens have said is it wasn't us that forced Nicola Sturgeon to resign. It wasn't us who opened Operation Branch Form. It wasn't us who charged Peter Morrell, you know? And a myriad of other problems that the SNP have had, for example, the very divisive leadership contest. We didn't vote, half of our members didn't vote for a right wing, do I say small C, conservative nationalist? And I think that was probably a warning to us all about the possible directions the SNP could go. So I think there is huge advantages. We've got, hopefully, we'll see how this vote goes. We've got, hopefully, just under 2 years to really make a change, and I would say, you know, end the contradictions that the Butte House Agreement has somewhat forced upon us. And I think we can come out of this much stronger and get more seats in 2026 and more MSPs.
I think just to touch on something that you both said, and there's a lot of obviously Patrick Harvey and Lorna Slater kind of reiterated this point in their almost impromptu press conference in Holyrood earlier today. A lot of people say that this decision has been done by Hamza Yousaf to recapture the right of his party, the Fergus Ewings, who obviously were very vocally opposed to the Butte House agreement the whole way through it. A lot of talk online, though, that actually the end of the Butte House Agreement was never an option until the Green members started to talk about it so openly. Is there much scope for that argument, do you think, in that actually the Butte House Agreement would have continued had the Green membership not had such a reaction to the 2030 pledge? Or was it almost inevitable that Hamza Yousef or whoever the leadership was at the time was going to succumb to the right of the SNP, who have been increasingly vocal, especially since really the resignation of Nicola Sturgeon?
I think that wing of the SNP have been slowly turning the screw more and more. I wouldn't be surprised if Hamza was told that people were gonna a chunk were gonna resign and he would lose his majority anyway. If the Butte House agreement didn't end, and the fact that our members are allowed to have a vote on this, one of the party's many strengths, but was used as an excuse to end it. So yeah, I don't agree that I wouldn't agree with that, that the membership of our party being able to vote and actually have a discussion about what they want from the Butte House Agreement, if they want it to continue, somehow caused the end of the Butte House Agreement. I couldn't agree with that.
Yeah, I think you can see that possibility that Ted had outlined in a very recent vote, actually, this week. It was the, and I might get the name of the bill wrong because it's quite a long name, but Victims, Witnesses and Justice Reform Bill. There was a number of MSPs who abstained on that, and they all were part of that block that we're talking about within the SNP. I think, to be honest, even if members had voted to keep the Butte House Agreement, I think after UK general election and potentially losing so many seats, I think we would have seen a leadership challenge in Hamza Yousef anyway. I think that was almost inevitable. Obviously, in elections, anything could happen, so it wouldn't have been guaranteed. But if that had happened, I think we would have seen the right of the party in the SNP move, make a move. I think one of the big things that Ted touched on there, actually, our members have the power to do this in our party. I would actually go as far as to say I think we're the last truly democratic party in Scotland. Our members have the power. Only 100 of them are needed to call an EGM. And we can then discuss these things and we can take votes. I think our leaders preempted that somewhat and called it when it was obvious those signatures were going in. And I think the signature total in the end was 144. If you think about one of the things I'd said to some members, because they were like, oh, that's such a small minority of our membership. But we all know in political parties, roughly 10% of members are actually active. So if you look at that, there was almost 20% of our active members were saying to us, we want to have this discussion. I think, again, like Ted said, that's a huge strength in the Scottish Greens. And it also, unlike in some other parties, it shows you how valuable joining a political party can be. Especially if you're joining the Scottish Greens, because you, as a member, have a say in what happens in government in a way that I can't imagine any other member of any other party can say that say with confidence that they have that same level of power.
I think that's a really good point. To move on slightly to something we've touched on briefly throughout, Hamza Yousef's vote on no confidence. Obviously, First Minister's questions today, matter of hours after this impromptu press conference, after this emergency cabinet meeting, and ultimately after the end of the Butte House Agreement, Douglas Ross stood up, question one, and announced that he was lodging a vote on no confidence. Throughout the day, we've had everybody kind of declare their sides on it. Obviously, the SNP are going to be whipped to vote for Hamza Yousef, but as far as we can see, they're the only party to announce that they would vote for him. The Scottish Labour and Scottish Conservatives probably unsurprisingly have said they would vote against the continuation of Hamza Yousef. And the Scottish Greens, of course, have come out today and said that they would not have confidence in the continuation of Hamza Yousef's leadership. I think in terms of the rules of Parliament, the vote on no confidence being in Hamza Yousef as opposed to being in the government require him not to stand down if he loses. However, obviously, common sense would dictate that that would be a horrific decision. If Hamza Yusuf loses this vote of no confidence, what are the next steps in the eyes of Green memberships and Green voters? Do we think that a leadership change is enough? Do we think that a snap Holyrood election is what's needed? What would you like to see happen on the back of Hamza Yusuf losing a no confidence vote?
Well, I think it's too early to gauge what, and I know me and Ted don't speak for all members. You know, there's a wide variety of views. I think it's a bit early to gauge that. But if we're looking at the parliamentary rules, as I understand them at the very least, if Hamza Yusuf loses a vote of no confidence, the SNP would have 28 days to put someone else forward. And if they fail to do so, we're into snap election territory. When we're looking at the parliamentary arithmetic, the SNP have 63 seats. You need 65 for a majority. So they would need the support of Ash Reagan. If they got the support of Ash Reagan, and then you have basically a tie between those in favour of keeping Hamza Yusuf, and you have those a tie between those who are against that. The presiding officer then has the casting vote, and by convention, they would cast their vote for the status quo. So Hamza Yusuf would survive. So bizarrely, we now have the prospect of one of the most odd, unpopular, polling hardly anything in polls party, the ALBA party, or ALAPA party, whichever way you want to pronounce it. They now holds Hamza Yusuf to ransom, really. I think that's what made today so resoundingly daft from a strategic point of view for him. I'll be honest, I think there are people within the SNP who have advised him to do this so that they can clear the way for their own leadership ambitions. That's the feeling I get, because from his perspective, if I was Hamza Yusuf, I wouldn't have done what he did today. I would have taken the risk. I would have waited a month. Yes, there's some instability. You would have had Greens talking about this for ages, but he could have just got on doing what he needed to do, hoped for the best. Maybe if he was even smarter than that, he could have thrown us a bone, a few bones here and there, some concessions. There's lots in the Scottish Green manifesto he could have plucked from and said, "Oh, I'll give you that," and sweeten the deal for Scottish Green members. He hasn't done that, and I think that was really, really daft. I don't think there's an appetite within any of the political parties, bar maybe Labour and the Lib Dems, to have an election. The Tories are facing a wipeout. Us as Greens, we've just started preparing for the UK general election. I know, as an activist myself, the idea of having a UK general election and a Scottish general election at the same time is pretty horrifying to me. I think the messages would be really confused and lost. And I think the SNP, if they're looking at polling, they don't want an election either. So I would imagine these parties might need to wisen up a bit, and actually look. They'll probably end up looking out for their own self-interest and not allow an election to take place. But I think Hamza Yusuf's days are numbered, if he continues doing what he's doing.
Well, you go to.
Yeah, I can't understand why he would have announced it the morning of FMQs and not expect one of the opposition parties to not introduce a vote of no confidence. It just seems like such a strategic oversight that he has to be getting advice from someone who hates him. Because it's such a ridiculous decision. I'm with Guy, obviously, because I would have waited it out. I don't think that we, well, I don't know how we would have voted, but I actually think we, the Greens, would have looked worse if we had voted to leave than we do now. I think this has actually benefited us from a political standpoint. Yeah, I do think he needs some better advisors.
Yeah,
I
and
suppose
just
the arg sorry, Angel.
on you go, just going into that, Josh, this isn't the first political mistake he's made. I think the one political thing that he has really been strong on was Palestine, and I think that's because it's got such a visceral personal aspect to it. I think that's maybe why he's been so good on that issue. But if you're looking at some of the decisions he's been making since he came to office, he's not been able to set the narrative. It's very much react, 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 and it's very impulsive. And you cannot lead the government like this. You need to be taking the initiative. And if you look at the government program, almost all the ideas, if we're looking at all of it, was coming from us. It's almost like the SNP have run out of ideas. The only thing that he came up with that seemed to be his own was the council tax freeze. And that's caused an absolute furore, not just within the Greens, but in every political party, including the SNP. We have a situation where SNP councillors in COSLA were basically calling the idea stupid and really, really damaging. I don't understand who has given him advice at all on these issues. And I think he really needs to look at the circle around him and get some new people, because they're not looking out for his best interest or his party's.
I also just want to say, thinking about it from a general election perspective, something that I think he's actually missed is the Greens are standing right now, what's it, 32 candidates. There are branches that have been holding off standing in the general election out of fear of upsetting SNP voters or allowing maybe the Conservatives in over the SNP. I don't think the Conservatives are likely to get in Scotland, looking at them. But this is now, I don't know if it's just, maybe it's because it's the day that it's happened and there's tensions are high and emotions are running high, but I feel like it's more likely for more branches now to stand more constituency candidates in the general election, which is going to probably harm the SNP. So I think there's a lot of oversights that he's made strategically.
Actually, a really good point, and not one that I've seen explored actually really online at all. But yeah, I would agree that it almost seems that prior to this, Hamza Yousaf's Westminster campaign has gone against almost everything he said about the Green Party in Holyrood. And actually, this probably does dampen the SNP's prospects of the next general election even more. There has now essentially been given a go-ahead for yet another pro-independence party to stand essentially in every seat across the country. There is nothing anybody that was maybe holding off because the SNP had helped Greens into government and there was that almost coalition, anybody that was holding off standing for that has no reason now not to stand against the SNP. They have gone from partnered parties to essentially complete opposition. If, knowing what we know now and how the Bute House agreement has panned out and what has been given and taken by both parties, what would need to change fundamentally for the Green membership to consider a power sharing agreement like the Bute House agreement again?
I think there needs to be, well, right now what's happened is you've had a complete breakdown of trust. So our MSP team cannot trust the First Minister and the Cabinet, essentially. That's what's happened. So it would probably be either from our side that our whole MSP team would need to change, or from the SNP side that the people at the top of government would need to change, or maybe a bit of both. I think you're going to have a situation, because there has been that breakdown of trust, you're probably not going to be able to see the same level of cooperation that Greens are well known for until at least post-2026. For members, I think, like Ted alluded to, different branches. So my branch was not particularly concerned about SNP reaction, but different branches were taking different stances, because obviously our branches are autonomous. I think one of the things, actually, just sidestepping slightly, that people don't, there, something that's come out of this is people don't really understand how the Scottish Greens work or function. You know, I think it's quite strange for people that 100 members could essentially almost de facto topple a government in some ways. Do you know, I think a lot of people find that strange. I think it's strange that our branches have so much autonomy. Like, I'm a co-convener of a branch as well. People might be surprised at the level of power that we have when it comes to selecting candidates, etc. So that's one of the things that's come out of it. But I think the big thing that we will need to see a re-establishment of is trust. Can we trust the people in the SNP? Can we trust them to actually work with us in a way that is not going to surprise us. Again, council tax freeze is a classic example of that. Today, ending the Bute House Agreement, that's two breaches of trust in the space of a few months. So I think that's going to be very difficult. I think it's probably going to need some changes at the top of maybe both parties post 2026, and then perhaps we can see maybe a rebuilding of trust between both parties. But it's gonna take some time. Right now, everyone's feeling a bit hot, and throwing various words around about each other. So I think when the temperature cools down, we might be able to get a better assessment of where both parties are going to move forward and work together.
I couldn't find the mute button there. Could you repeat the your question again?
Yeah. What, in your eyes, would have to change in order for the Scottish Greens to consider an agreement like this again?
I do think, like we discussed earlier, we do need to really look at what went wrong and what went right from that and actually take that on board. So I think there's some change from a Green perspective that we have to do internally. But in terms of what needs to happen with the SNP, I do think it's a change in leadership. I think it's a change in the people at the top of the SNP, because I think it may change after people have cooled down a little bit, but I do think that Greens are feeling, and I some SNP members are feeling betrayed that this decision has been made out of what feels like out of the blue, without any input from members. I do think it is actually change at the top of the SNP before we could consider that again. On our side, I do think that going into 2026, there will be some change in that as well. And having a larger group of MSPs would put us in actually a stronger position, because I do think being a party of seven MSPs really wasn't very beneficial to us in government. I think it did put us in a position where we were having to make more compromises than we were maybe comfortable with as members and actually our MSP team. Growing in our numbers of MSPs, maybe a change in leadership in the SNP, then we can maybe think about it again. But work still has to be done on that.
Yeah, actually, exactly what Ted said. That's what I was alluding to. I think if we have a fresh crop of Green MSPs, and I'm not saying that we'd replace all our current MSPs, but have new MSPs in, I think that might change the dynamic as well. The other thing that Ted alluded to, which I think is really quite disappointing for probably a lot of SNP members, they've had absolutely no say on this at all. And there didn't seem to be a mechanism, and obviously SNP members will probably scream at the podcast saying there is a mechanism, but there didn't seem to be a mechanism to hold their MSP team to account in that sense, let alone their party leader. And I think that if Greens are to learn some lessons, I think maybe SNP members need to look at some, learn some lessons as well and look at themselves and try and move towards a far more democratic system. It cannot be the situation where the leader of a political party just has so much power. I mean, we saw during the time of Nicola Sturgeon, I mean, her power within the party was huge. And obviously there's been some downsides to that they later discovered, in the last year. So I definitely think there's some reflection needed on the membership of both parties, and hopefully by the time we get to 2026, we'll be in a better place.
Just as a final question then, gut feeling as it stands, obviously Ash Reagan is probably the most unpredictable person to give all this power to, but what is everybody's feeling as it stands just now? Will Humza Yousaf survive this vote of no confidence, or is this the beginning of the end?
Oh, Ted, you coward. I love how you leave me to answer the hard question. I think it's perfectly possible that Ash Reagan will try and will save Hamza Yousaf and try and paint that as, oh, look, the ALPA party is willing to work with the SNP. You should lend us your list vote. Because I think that they see the Greens as benefiting from the list vote of the SNP. I've always seen it the opposite way. I've always seen it that the SNP benefit from the constituency vote of Greens. I've never seen it as just a one-way street. It's always been a two-way street. And if you look at some of the figures, so for example, I stood in Aberdeen Central in 2021. And if you look at the amount of votes I got in the constituency vote, it was something like, I think, 6.6%. And on the list, it was 9%, something like that. So there was only a 3% point difference there. So, but I think the ALBA party really do think that this myth is the case. And I think they think if they ride to the rescue of Hamza Yousaf, SNP voters in their droves will back them on the list. I think they're forgetting that the SNP has a long history of the mantra of both votes SNP. That is always their campaign mantra at Holyrood elections. That's not going to change. And I think the ALBA party are probably deluding themselves. But it's Ash Reagan and Alex Salmond. So delusion is, you know, is their brand. So let's just see where they go with that.
I mean, it'll be really interesting to see what's in her letter to Hamza that she's based it on. We need to take a thermometer reading. But yeah, I do have to agree that I do think that the ALPA party do believe the myth that the Greens are sort of riding in on the coattails of the SNP thanks to list votes. From my experience, the SNP are some of the most tribal voters, have some of the most tribal voters. If you look at, you know, the both votes SNP strategy, that tends to hold up. They have hundreds of thousands of people vote, wasting a list vote on a party that isn't going to get anyone in the Northeast because they just sweep everyone aside in the constituencies. And I really doubt that ALAPA are going to benefit from saving the SNP in this one. But and even in the council elections, if you look at the sort of transfer in votes, a lot of the time the SNP give their first preference, a second preference to the two SNP candidates and don't transfer. So yeah, I do think it's a myth that maybe the ALPA party and their advisors, who are probably some of the same advisors, advisors in Hamza, have bought into this. And yeah, I do think it's quite funny to think about.
Funny, but also terrifying. Ash Reagan holding the balance of power is something I think none of us were expecting. And it's going to be interesting to see the relationship between her and Hamza Yousaf if she does save him. Let's remember, Hamza Yousaf was not exactly complimentary when she left government. And I would imagine the headline quote that he issued about her, I can't exactly remember what it was, but I remember it was pretty disparaging, is going to be flooding social media just now. Yeah, it's going to be very interesting. I might just end on a bit of optimism. I think we will get through this. And when I say we, I mean the Greens, but I also mean potentially the SNP. I think it will damage them in the run-up to 2026. I think after 2026, though, they will have a chance to reset. I think they will have a much clearer sense of direction. And it might give them, whether they're in opposition or not, give them the chance to actually come up with some new ideas. Because I think that's really where they've been running short for quite some time. I think people forget, by the time we get to 2026, it'll be almost 20 years in government. 20 years. That in and of itself is a huge achievement. But quite clearly, in a democracy, that usually means you're running out of steam. The Greens were in government 2.5 years. We've still got plenty of ideas and plenty of steam within us. So by the time we get to 2026, I think we'll be in a much better place. And I hope Scotland will be in a much better place as well.